There's always this greater threat that is steeped in, you know, a kind of religiosity. Whereas in science fiction, I mean, if you think about Star Wars, for instance, Darth Vader is not the ultimate bad person. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's probably just a fallen person who is sort of sucked up by the Emperor, but then there's someone bigger than the Emperor. Mm-hmm. And so that it's sort of ongoing in a way that you can kind of, you still have the good and evil, but maybe what makes someone good isn't really as clear cut
as
with, you know who the heroes are in The Hobbit.
All right. Hi, everyone. This is Laura Yu. I'm here with my friends, Sylvia Lee and Kofi Adisa.
Hello.
Hello.
For another discussion of bookish stuff, very casually. So today we're going to be talking about fantasy genre. But in approaching this show, I realized how diverse and really broad that idea of fantasy is. My basic idea was, like Game of Thrones, like dragons and fairies. But after doing some looking up on Amazon and sort of on Reddit is a really good place to go for stuff like this. And I found Masterclass has a list of 18 subgenres that I thought were interesting. So very quickly, they include things like dystopian fantasy, high fantasy, and those refer to these epic fantasies that go on like trilogies and things like that. Magical realism, which is something I'm going to be talking about with a book I read. And then things like sword and sorcery, paranormal romance. What else? Even like fairy tales really fall under fantasy. And I was very sci-fi falls, some sci-fi falls under that. But I was really, really fascinated to see something called, I'm probably going to not pronounce this correctly, but Wuxia fantasy. It's Wuxia. It is specifically a subgenre rooted in classic Chinese literature.
Yes.
It involves elements of fantasy interspersed with martial arts. And they gave multiple sources gave Jade City by Fonda Lee as a example of that subgenre. So I thought that was really interesting just how many different types of books and stories and characters fall under this this genre. So, Kofi.
Yeah.
Let's go to you.
All right.
What do you make of fantasy or what did you read for today?
Well, I think the thing about the fantasy genre for me at least has always been it's been one of those genres that I read the least, and it's not something that I got into or get into a lot. Partly because, my thinking about fantasy sort of stems from fairies and goblins and trolls and all of those things. And they can be interesting on some levels, but on a lot of levels, they're just not to me. Until I decided to read Out of Fantasy and Science Fiction, which is a periodical that comes out sort of like quarterly. And this one is from the 2015, March, April. I could have read something more recent, but as I was telling you, my daughter has been pilfering because I think the last one or two had something to do with dragons, and she is into dragon stories, which is great.
Then she'll like the one that I read.
Yeah, because last night I asked her if you had a choice, would you want to be someone who could ride a dragon or control sea monsters? And without hesitation, she's like, ride a dragon. But this has nothing to do with dragons. This is called Le Heron by Charlotte Ashley, and it's set in the late 17th century, I believe, in France. And Le Heron is this warrior who has to battle up. She battles these different fairies to fight this ultimate fairy lord named Herlishan. My French is not at that good. And the ideal is that you're winning a kind of tribute of some sort. She has a second who's a nun, but is also kind of like a witch, which is kind of weird. But that's what fantasies do. They put people in these weird spaces. And so each of the battles, you have to draw blood three times to win. But the last person she has to fight, it's one blood. Like if you bleed, you automatically lose. And not only would she lose, she would lose some other great thing. Each battle, she wins something. And some of the things she wins are like musical instruments that play themselves. And then she also wins 20 additional years of life.
Oh,
wow. But in this particular final battle, she wins basically her second, because mm-hmm. her second put herself up for sacrifice. And so that's what's at stake.
It sounds like a quest, like uh-huh. focused.
Yeah, it is. It is a quest focus. And you don't really know why they are fighting. That's the other thing. This is just a sport. It's uh-huh. outlawed, by the way. And if you're caught, you get in trouble. But no one gets caught. And they seem to only fight fairies and fairy lords.
Hmm.
And so that's what I read.
So, but even not knowing why they do it, would you, like, you could stay engaged in what they're doing?
Yeah, because I was kind of thinking like, okay, well, what's the point of all of this? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're just fighting. But then what I realized that she won something other than the battle.
Mm-hmm.
So she either won these instruments that she didn't know how to play but could make music. Or in one case, she beat this guy who was kind of a clumsy fighter, and he gifted her 20 years of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But how she fought Perlishan was unique among the other fights because she had to use some kind of magic.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was a good read. It made me want to read more by Charlotte Ashley.
Okay. That's always a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read, funny story. When you search into Google or Amazon, right, fantasy fiction, yes, there are a lot of genres that come out. Particularly the ones with, I call, bodice rippers, right, are often the ones that kind of, you know, come out. So I was like, what on earth? So, you know, I refined my search results. Instead of adult, young adult fantasy fiction. Not adult. Do not, unless you're into that kind of thing, which is you do you. But so then, you know, some of the titles came up. I recognized one as one that my son and I had started reading, and I would classify it under the high fantasy. It's a series, and it's based off of a novel, but we've been reading the graphic novel version of it. It does involve dragons.
Uh-huh.
Apparently it's all the rage. It's called Wings of Fire.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, so it's basically like a more PG version of Game of Thrones, if all the characters were dragons, basically. Mm-hmm. Like the dragons were talking, and the dragon says, like, also known as like the Dragonette prophecies or something like that. And really, it's, you know, it follows core group of, I think, five baby dragons or dragonettes who are basically chosen. They're the chosen ones to kind of bring an end to this huge dragon war that's going on. And there's different tribes of dragons. There's like the ice wings that are like the, you know, mm-hmm. icy northern tundra-esque dragons, and they shoot little icicles and things like that. And then there's like the mud wings. Then there's like the rain wings and the sea wings, and they each have their own like kingdom. And right now there's like a battle going on between like two of the dragon daughter heirs, and they're sort of fighting it out over who's going to have supremacy over the king. They're the sand wings, I believe. They have some problems. And so it was really interesting because I don't usually, like, I'm not hugely into dragon lore or anything like that. And I was a little surprised because it's a little gory. Like, they...
Especially for graphic novel. Like,
yeah.
You have the illustrations.
Yeah, you have the illustrations. And so, you know, I was reading it with my son, and part of me was like, oh, come on, right? And I look over, and my son's like really into it. He's like, next page, right? So, like, and then suddenly I start getting into it too. And it's a lot of like, there's night wings too, and they're like the more mystical, like shamanistic ones that can like read your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was actually really interesting kind of getting into that. And I think one of the challenging parts for some people who don't naturally take to fantasy fiction is the whole world building piece.
Mm-hmm.
I found that I am very impatient when it comes to world building, like narratives. Like I went to a local bookstore that recently opened in Columbia called Queen Takes Book. And I was looking at I think it was like a Court of Thorns and Roses, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened it up to see like, okay, can I get kind of captivated by the first few pages? And I think one of the names were mostly consonants. Like, there were, like, no vowels in the names. And I was like, no, I can't take you seriously if you have no vowels in your name. I'm sorry.
That's so strict, Sylvia.
I know. I mean, like, come on, you know? So, and it was long. I was like, oh, no. I can't keep coming back to this character with no vowels in their name. So, like, you know, I found I'm very impatient. Even when I remember reading The Hobbit, which I guess is, like, high fantasy as well. It's, like, a series. And I love The Lord of the Rings, like, you know, as a series, as a thing. But even I remember when I was, what, in sixth grade and we read The Hobbit for the first time, I was, like, very impatient with Bilbo.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, Bilbo Baggins, like, come on, you know? And I remember thinking, like, it's just taking too long. But then once I got into it, I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be the same case for a lot of fantasy fiction. So that's why I actually like, though, the sci-fi fantasy fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ursula K. Le Guin, like I like her. And it sounds like I would like that Charlotte Ashley.
Ashley, yeah.
Because when they put you right in it, mm-hmm. like very quickly yes. in it. And some of these places do, some of these other writers do that too. But when it's just, it's in it, you're in it, and it's simple enough to kind of right. get the, you know, the basics of what you need for the narrative mm-hmm. to get invested in the story. Whereas some people, I think, try to create these elaborate worlds. And that is like a feat. That's skill. That's talent. I have a harder time mm-hmm. doing that. I think that's why the graphic novel of Wings mm-hmm. of Fire was helpful, because it's all image. You're mm-hmm. in it immediately. There's right. no like expository lead up to how this world was created. I think, yeah. So that's one thing that I struggle with, I realize, with fantasy yeah. is kind of getting into that world.
Yeah.
I wonder if that world building is why so many fantasy that I've come across are really long.
Yeah.
It was very, and you know, I start Googling like the best, what are the best and the best sellers and the classics. And there are lots of suggestions, great suggestions, but they're all like 500 pages uh-huh. long. And I suppose it takes time to
right.
build this world in which you're going to have these characters operating. But the thing about fantasy and children, I don't know. I thought that all children like fantasy kind of things, but my kids would never really get into it. They didn't like Harry Potter. Like, I have the books. They never read them. Percy Jackson, right. no, not so yeah. much. And people keep giving us these, like, series of books for our kids, and they just don't read them. But they have read Wings of Fire. They really
oh,
like
really?
That. Yeah. So maybe it's the graphic novel nature part of it too, right? Okay. They like that. Well, there were no dragons in the book I read for this discussion. And it's called Before the Coffee Gets Cold by Toshikazu Kawaguchi. And it seems like this writer has like many books that it's not like a series, but many books that sort of maybe fall under this kind of storytelling. But basically, it's a time travel. Why did I choose a time travel? You know, I have a hard time following time travel. But there's a coffee shop. It's modern Japan, right? Okay. There's a coffee shop, very small basement, has few tables. And the idea is that there is one chair in this coffee shop, and if you sit in it, you can travel back in time, and you have to come back. And the hostess pours you a fresh cup of coffee, and that sets the things in motion. And then you have to, you go back in time, but you only go back to time in the coffee shop. So you will go back to some point in the coffee shop when you were there before with someone who's been there before with you, okay. right? So it's a very limited mm-hmm. sort of scope. And then you have to come back before the coffee gets cold. And that's the time.
Ah.
Yeah, so I guess it falls under magical realism mm-hmm. because right. of that element. And then there is like a ghost. Like, so what happens if you don't come back,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you fail to finish yeah. your coffee before it gets cold. You become a ghost who like you live in that chair for the
no.
for all eternity.
Oh.
So there's like a lady there who's always there, and you can only sit in that chair when she goes to the bathroom once a day.
I'm as not, ghosts are wont to do.
That's yes. correct. They ghosts have to go to the bathroom.
They need bio breaks
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. But then what the book didn't answer was, okay, well, there's already a lady there who's sitting there all the time. Well, what if I get stuck mm-hmm. and I now become a ghost? Are we like sitting on top of each other?
Yeah,
like, what
exactly.
are we doing? Are we sharing a table? Anyway, so, but the book doesn't have to answer questions like that. Those are silly questions, right? So, but obviously, you know, it does not go into the mechanics of time travel or anything like that. Doesn't matter. But that's used to tell us stories about these characters who have something that they want to go back to the past for, mm-hmm. right? Or about. They want to change or get off their chest or see someone. So I guess because like the tool is the conceit is the time travel, but it wasn't about time travel. Mm. It was about these people. I found the stories like really, I think it, like somewhere I described it maybe on a Facebook post or something as being really kind. The stories are really kind and gentle and kind of sweet.
Are they like capsule stories, like each vignettes almost?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So each like chapter or section deals with a new person who wants to go back. Mm-hmm. But then they're all kind of connected together through the coffee shop and the people who run the coffee shop. So I recommend it. It's beautiful, beautifully written. And actually, I would love to read more by this author. Ooh. Yeah. So, and apparently there's a lot of magical realism in contemporary Japanese literature. Mm-hmm. So I want to look more into that.
Yeah. It makes me want to read some Borges because he uses a lot of magical realism. Yeah. And I remember when I was in grad school, there were people who were like really into it. Yeah. And then it turned me off because felt like that in post-colonial lit were just like the big things. I was just sort of like, I don't want to do
that. Is he the one who wrote the axolotl story? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
I think it is. So actually, I think I picked that out to teach in a course. But it's a very short story about a man who goes to the museum, aquarium, like every day or something, and just stares at this axolotl. Mm-hmm. That's what they're called, right? And he does it every day, all the time. And then one day, he is the axolotl now looking out at a man. So maybe that's that magical realism stuff,
sound like
right?
It.
Yeah. And it's exploring the psyche of the person, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the thing that I am acutely aware of, and you mentioned about the world building, it happens in sci-fi too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But for whatever reason, the suspension of disbelief in sci-fi is greater than that in fantasy for me. Mm-hmm. If I know it's sci-fi, I'm willing to just believe everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's so much into the possibility of the future.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereas fantasy seems to be rooted in something that is tangible, like
culture.
It's like in culture, like a coffee shop, or in this case, in this battlefield. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can kind of, because there used to be duels and there used to be battles, and so you could kind of understand, but not battling with fairies or fairy lords, and that apparently they're not as tricky as you would think a fairy lord would be. They're so easily thwarted.
Those fairy lords, amateurs.
Yeah, like how did you get a lord? You're so clumsy. But anyway. And so there's something about that I haven't quite figured out, but I know I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
That if I'm reading Harry Potter, I feel like, oh, God, this first 40 pages. But if I'm reading something that's a little more sci-fi-ish, I can't stop reading those pages. Yeah. It's so
like,
inviting.
I totally hear what you're saying, because I was thinking the same thing, that with sci-fi, I have a lot more patience, I guess, in terms of going along with the world building. But with a lot of that, like the high fantasy, so much of it is rooted in like existing cultural traditions or civilizations, or nations, for example. Tolkien, right? A lot of that's in Western European folklore, right? Or tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The Wuxia one, the subculture of the Chinese literature, I have heard of that. And there's a whole dress. Actually, at the Ren Fair, people will dress in Wuxia costume now, And because it's part of that sort of like lore, but it's just cultural. It's happening at the same time, period. Yeah. And I think that's what it is. Some of it is rooted in a time period.
Yeah.
That makes me sort of,
Are you saying Renaissance festivals are going DEI? Or globalizing?
I guess.
Okay.
But I was even reading with Children of Blood and Bone with one guy. And that one's in, African, rooted in African traditions and practices. And it was really that one was actually really cool, because I'd never read any fantasy fiction rooted in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it took me I just got impatient in a way that I don't with sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out, even as you're talking, why, Dune. Dune is like super long dense and
world building.
Yeah, but I so love that
me
book.
Me too. And I'm like, but why did I have the patience for Dune?
Right.
But, barely have patience for this. I'm trying to figure out, what is it about science and the imagination versus are like linked to maybe a culture or civilization. Because I think fantasy and science fiction both are just such a one of the strongest representations of the power and limitlessness of the human imagination.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, how did they think of this? You know, like, this is insane to, you know, you're all almost creating mythology, you know.
But maybe we tend to implicitly just give more credence to science.
That's what I'm wondering.
Right? Like, we're just kind of built that way or conditioned our brains. As much as we are creative people and appreciate creativity, as people love books, I wonder if just we're built to, I don't know, look to science as plausible, right? And possible and future oriented. Whereas I don't know why I think of like fantasy, if I think of those kind of like dragons and things like that, I think of the past, right?
Like medieval.
Like they happened in the past versus looking to the future. I don't know. I think, but I'm with you. I tend to read more sci-fi than fantasy, I think, and it has to do with that. And also sci-fi also often are linked with dystopian, which I also enjoy reading. So I think maybe those things go together too.
Yeah, the idea of a collapsing civilization or a need to go seek out a new world because the old world is dying from like something. And we could all go,
exactly.
Plastic. Yeah. Plastic's the reason.
Climate change. Like when we read The Unkindness of Ghosts. Yes. That's one that would like kind of have one leg in fantasy and one leg in sci-fi.
That's right.
But I really enjoyed that because it was like, the world has collapsed and now they've built an artificial baby sun. Mm-hmm. But they've still created the same caste system, you know, and that serves you right. You know, human's gonna human, right? Yeah. But like, to me, that's that kind of moral like and questioning is really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I think that might be what it is, actually. That's a component of it. In science fiction, there's always a component of moral or ethical questioning, right? Like, whereas I think in fantasy there is, but it presents differently, I suppose. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that there's with fantasy, and in by no mean or no stretch of the imagination, I am a fantasy expert, but it almost always seems to deal with power and the structure and power structure. Good versus genuine evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Someone taking over, battle. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you think about Tolkien or you think about some of the others, there's always this greater threat that is steeped in, you know, a kind of religiosity. Whereas in science fiction, I mean, if you think about Star Wars, for instance, Darth Vader is not the ultimate bad person. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's probably just a fallen person who is sort of sucked up by the Emperor, but then there's someone bigger than the Emperor. Mm-hmm. And so that it's sort of ongoing in a way that you can kind of, you still have the good and evil, but maybe what makes someone good isn't really as clear cut
as I agree.
With, you know who the heroes are in The Hobbit.
And I think in the full Star Wars universe now that we have the expanded Star Wars universe, I've been watching a lot of Star Wars with the kids. They're like obsessed right now. That actually came out to me that it's beyond just good and evil, dark side and light side, right? Because you see a lot of characters making morally questionable choices.
Right.
Even beforehand, I think everyone hates on the episodes 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, my kids are really drawn to them, more so than 4, 5, and 6. And as I'm watching them and rewatching them, I'm like, the Jedi were questionable too. Like, they were doing a lot of questionable things too. And it caused a lot of, you know, I sense the conflict in you, you know? Yes. And that was really interesting because I was like, oh, it's a lot more complex. And I appreciated that about sci-fi is it's more than just a big bad.
Yes.
There's a lot of things going on.
So. Yeah, my wife is watching she's watching the cartoons all the way through the movies. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's a particular order that Disney has it situated and she's been following it. And I just don't have the patience for that. That's a deeper level of commitment that I don't have.
That's how I feel about the Marvel universe. I'm like, I'm going to have to break up with you all because Marvel, you're asking for a deeper commitment than I can give right now.
You know, one of the lists that I look at actually included, and it was much more detailed than the 18 from Masterclass, but it included superhero fantasy as a subgenre.
I can see
there's all of that. The other two that I thought of that are really popular, I think, are big subgenres. One is alternate history.
Yes.
For, right, novels.
Yeah. Like Octavia Butler's Kindred.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
That, I like also time travel.
Yeah. I actually really, I was just thinking, I like alternate history ones. Yes. To me, that's fascinating. Yeah. Go ahead.
And the other one is the sort of like dark versions of fairy tale.
Yeah.
Right? So some of them get really twisty and others are just alternate versions of a fairy tale, for example. So I think I don't really read his fantasy, when I looked at the subgenres and some of their recommendations, I do read them. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's not the dragons and the fairies.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So it's not about elven magic.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched The Lord of the Rings, but I'm never going to read that. That's not my
interest. The books are interest. So, I know everyone says this, but the books are just so much better.
Yeah.
But I think that's why I have absolutely zero interest in reading about fairy lords and elves and all this stuff, because I'm like, someone did it. And
you read the best one.
Yeah, they did it pretty well. I mean, they made up their entire language, journals and journals of this language, and they did pretty well. And I think I'm good for now. That quota has been filled.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's not a need. It's not an itch that I want to scratch.
No,
yeah.
My light. No.
Well, time flew.
Time did fly.
I think that's our time.
Yes, it does.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you have your favorite fantasy novels or stories you want to share with us, please comment on our Facebook page, Bookish, a casual book club. You can follow us on any app that where you listen to podcasts in general, or on Dragon Digital Radio at Howard Community College. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Dragon Podcasts. Connect with us at podbean.com/dragonpodcasts.